Well, that's a little Rock the Casbah from 1982 from The Clash, introducing us here to another episode of Conservative Casual Friday, a weekly blog talk radio show with your show host, Andrew Herod. We like to discuss issues of the day, current events for conservatives and others. And today we want to talk about the recent decision involving Morocco in the context of its recognizing Israel, establishing relations with Israel, that the administration of President Donald Trump has agreed to recognize the claim of Morocco to the territory of Western Sahara, south of Morocco, on the Atlantic coast in Africa, a disputed territory. And to discuss this issue, whether the Trump administration has made the right move, we have Irina Zuckerman, a human rights lawyer and international security expert with experience in Morocco and the wider Middle East and North Africa region. Well, welcome to the show, Irina.
Thank you so much, and Happy New Year. This is certainly a great way to kick off the year.
Yes, this is our Happy New Year to all of our listeners out there as well, as we are continuing in our COVID-19 lockdowns across the country. We hope 2021 is going to be a better year than 2020, and we can get out of this. Well, looking at, first off, Morocco and Western Sahara, what experience have you had in Morocco, Irina?
Well, I've been there multiple times, and I've been engaged in every level. I've been after to civil society leaders, with members of the government, with regular people, of course. I've traveled in multiple cities throughout the country, and I've also had the experience of being in Dakhla, which is the city in the very south where the United States is supposed to be building one of its consulates as per the recent agreement. And while I was there, I had an opportunity to interview former Polisario members, as well as individuals whose family members have been abducted by Polisario. I've talked to former Polisario prisoners who have been imprisoned by their own leadership, so to speak. So that was a very, very memorable experience.
Well, so Dakhla is in the territory of Western Sahara, or what Morocco refers to as its southern provinces. And as you noted, the Trump administration has announced that the United States government is going to build a new consulate in Dakhla. Dakhla, I believe, was the former name, had a Spanish name, Villa Cisneros. I guess for listeners, we should note that this territory of Western Sahara was colonized by Spain in 1884. And it was under Spanish rule until 1975, but Morocco has claimed this territory as well as in the past with Mauritania as being a part of the former territory of a wider Moroccan kingdom or empire. And so they've claimed the territory here. Discuss the Polisario. That is the group then that began in 1973. First fighting against Spanish for independence of Western Sahara. And since Morocco took over control of the region after the Spanish got out in 1975, they've been fighting Morocco since 1991, when there was a ceasefire under the United Nations.
Well, actually, the reality of it is that many young people who at the time joined Polisario with the hope of fighting the Spaniards were woefully misled and deceived, and Polisario's role in the anti-colonial movement has been greatly exaggerated, mostly by Polisario's own sources and also Europeans who've come to support Polisario since then. In reality, Polisario actually was very much on the sidelines of that fight, although they claimed to be greatly engaged. Most of their forces were later dedicated in turning on Morocco after the victory over Spain was for the most part achieved by Moroccan forces and organized marches and by the King Hassan II. Following that, Polisario actually turned to terrorist attacks, including on Moroccan fishermen, as a means of sending the message to the government. Well, because as with any organization, it needed to fight and to find another purpose. It was backed by the Soviet Union, as many so-called liberation movements were at the time. It very much shared in the radical leftist semi-communist ideology, as we have seen with other movements that were backed by the Soviet Union. I would compare it to the PLO, actually, in some respects, because it was very much, very much the same idea. And Algeria, of course, also very much jumped on board. Algeria was pro-Soviet, while Morocco was pro-Western during the Cold War. Morocco has had a very long relationship. It was the first country to recognize the United States once it became an independent state. And it has always had good relations with the West and leaned in that direction during the Cold War. Algeria was backed by the Soviet Union, and they benefited from backing groups like Polisario that were essentially being used as a tool to attack Morocco, not so much because Moscow cared about territorial claims, but because it was a way to instigate Cold War attacks on West, on the West, so to speak. Very similar to the way they were using other liberation movements. They did not necessarily care about the cause itself. They were just using it as a tool against the United States and its allies.
Go ahead.
Since then, since the fall of the Soviet Union, actually, another country that was very much involved was Cuba. Cuba was involved in not only training Polisario fighters along with other terrorists from around the world, but they actually abducted children and they raised them as fighters inside Cuba. And some of that has been a subject of research, but because most of this documentation remained in Cuban and Algerian and Soviet archives, a lot of it has never been released. Following the fall of the Soviet Union, Polisario did not cease to exist because by then, Algeria started asserting itself in Africa. It has had a long, protracted and troubled history of civil wars, fights against French colonialism and so forth, but it never but the rivalry with Morocco was one unifying factor there. So Polisario became very much an Algerian tool after the fall of Soviet Union. Moscow in the 90s was less interested in being involved in international affairs, but they never also completely abandoned their relationship with Algiers. They were always remained allies. To this day, Russia is, despite trading with Morocco and engaging in diplomatic relations, is more pro-Algeria and has backed Algeria on Polisario and Sahara related issues. But new players started coming in and using Polisario for their own purposes, namely some of the European Union countries and particularly leftist parties. They found it advantageous to use Polisario similarly to the way we've seen European NGOs gravitate towards the Palestinian Authority and that general area. And also Iran has taken advantage of Polisario and is now trying to use it as its proxy. You'll see that some of the Polisario members have joined other terrorist organizations as well, like ISIS that's operating that area. They've had ties with Al-Qaeda and with criminal organizations in Sahara. So they've become very adept at evolving and surviving despite the fact that their original mission has kind of withered away. I mean, the tribes that they were trying to appeal to found it much more advantageous to have Moroccan citizenship and to benefit from huge Moroccan government investments in the area than from being tied up to, you know, slave camps in Tindouf in Algeria, which is where most of the Polisario constituency actually resides.
Yeah, and Polisario is an acronym then in Spanish for this insurgent group that after the Spanish withdrew from Western Sahara in 1975, immediately afterward in early 1976 on February 26, 1976, they announced this Sahrawi Arab Democratic Republic in the name of this Sahrawi nomadic people that lives in Western Sahara from Algeria, which has a small border with Western Sahara territory. This SADR, Sahrawi, Sahrawi, if I'm pronouncing that right, Arab Democratic Republic has its capital in this town of Tindouf in Algeria. When we speak of this people in the Western Sahara, there's an estimated now some 500, 600,000 people there. Given precisely Moroccan settlement of the area, it's estimated, I've seen estimates that something like two-thirds of those are actually from Morocco. But speaking of this Sahrawi population, this nomadic population from Western Sahara, who are they? What are they like? What are their relations with Morocco? Are they really distinct from Moroccans? Describe that population a bit.
So there are four distinct tribal groups related to, in the area. Two of the most well-known and prominent ones are Amazigh tribes, which are also known as Berber, and Tuareg tribes. As any tribal society, they are not limited by state lines. In other words, you also find Amazigh and Tuareg and the other tribes all over the North Africa. After Arab colonialism of North Africa, of course, many of them also mixed with Arabs. So most of them are, technically speaking, of mixed descent. Morocco itself is very much of mixed descent. The king is half Amazigh, and he also has direct descendancy from Mohammed on his father's side. So in reality, Morocco has a very complicated ethnic legacy. It acknowledges Amazigh, Arab, and Jewish history, because many Jewish tribes have also resided in that area for 2,500 years. Then there was another wave of Jews from after 1492 that arrived. The tribes in the south are similarly culturally to their counterparts, some of them in Mauritania. They wear similar clothes. Their style of food is more similar to that general area that what you find in the north of Morocco. There may be very minor differences in dialects, but overall they understand the dialects, the region dialects that spoken by most Moroccans. There's also a great deal of Spanish speakers in the south. And of course, there's French that's spoken everywhere, and most people also understand standard written Arabic, although it's rarely used in terms of interaction on the street, unless dealing with the outsiders who have come in. Now, in reality, these people in the south, they're Moroccan citizens. Since Morocco as a monarchy has asserted itself in the area, yes, there's been nomadic movement back and forth, but for the most part, most people eventually settle down and gain citizenship, and they're Moroccans. They're no different from anyone else in the country, and they're treated very much the same, with the same rights and privileges. Now, Palir Syrah is trying to claim that these people have actually at some point been independent, and they have independent control of some of the territory, which is simply not the case. When they were nomadic, they were nomadic. They did not have any state affiliation. And when they settled down within border lines of whatever states emerged in that area. As far as Palir Syrah is concerned, there hasn't been any independent state that could be considered that sort of Sahrawi republic. And democratic is certainly a misnomer in the same sense that the People's Republic of China has nothing to do with any sort of democracy. And same thing for North Korea. There's nothing democratic about it. The leadership has asserted complete authoritarian control. The people who are living in Tindouf live in camps. They're not integrated into Algeria. They do not have independence of movement. They're kept under a constant watch from local Algerian and Polisario guards. And anyone who tries to escape will be stopped. people have successfully escaped in the past, but it's degree free to leave. And the resources are being allocated in a way that's not democratic. They're diverted and stolen. The European humanitarian aid has been stolen. Billions have been stolen, as the reports have shown, by the European Union's own accounting and admission. So this is, there's nothing democratic or republican about this fictitious entity. It's a complete misnomer, and it's an assertion of power that has no real legitimacy. That's not to say that some of the African Union countries don't recognize it. That has caused a great deal of tensions between Morocco and African Union at one point, and other countries in the US, in the United Nations, have tried to play both sides there. But in reality, there's no real legitimacy. There's no distinct culture, no distinct linguistic heritage, no distinct history of having an independent state of any. So they're not an independent national group at all.
Yeah, and thinking of Morocco, when Morocco took over territory in 1975, when the Spanish left, they started out with what is known as this Green March on November 6, 1975, which the Spanish were just on the point of departing after having been fighting the Polisario, and some 300,000 Moroccans sort of marched into Western Sahara, along with some 20,000, 25,000 Moroccan troops. What do the Moroccan people feel about this territory? What is their interest in this territory? If you meet an average Moroccan on the street, do they really feel strong about having this territory be part of their country?
Absolutely. I'll tell you, that's the one thing, that and the king himself, that unifies every Moroccan, regardless of, you know, ideology, politics, theological level of involvement, you know, ethnicity or anything else, ethnic identification. They're all considered these territories part of Morocco. They have been extremely favorable to the Green March, and they all consider Polisario an imposter and a terrorist group. There is no question about how every Moroccan feels about national sovereignty and territorial integrity of their country. You can go to anybody, anywhere, even people who are not political, not interested in, you know, general political debates that you see in the media. You ask them, and they'll tell you without a question. Just people who won't even, you know, completely forgotten, living quietly in the mountains or close to the desert, that they all feel the same way.
Yeah, that's interesting. And this Sahrawi people, you say linguistically that they're very close to the Moroccans, that there's no basic language difference between the Moroccans and this small Sahrawi population in Western Sahara.
Exactly. I wouldn't say that it's small, by the way, because Polisario is trying to create an impression that there is some distinct group that has its own separate heritage. In reality, it's a very loose term because, as I mentioned, there have been tribes who have been traveling back and forth. Some of them settled, you know, in Mauritania. Others ended up in Algeria. And the ones who ended up within Moroccan territories just became Moroccans. So, in reality, it's a fairly large population, and the territory itself is strategically important for a number of reasons. So Polisario's claims to the territory are actually more of a motivation here than any claims to cultural heritage that doesn't really withstand any real scrutiny. The current Moroccan dynasty has been in power for 400 years. During that entire time, there's been, of course, issues with colonialism, French colonialism, Spanish colonialism, but the people haven't gone anywhere. It hasn't. There hasn't been a sudden reassemblance of territories. There's been outside influences for sure, but otherwise, it's been the same system.
Yeah, the monarchy of Morocco, noted it's the second oldest monarchy in the world after the Japanese monarchy. I believe the name for it is this Alawite, if I'm pronouncing that correctly, monarchy that's been on the throne since 1631 is the date I've seen given to the present day. The current king is Muhammad VI, who became king after his father, Hassan II, died in 1999, who was the king at the time when this Green March happened and oversaw this period of Western Sahara when the Polisario was fighting Morocco. Well, looking again at this Sahrawi population, people have noted that Western Sahara, along with Morocco itself, has various natural resources. In particular, Morocco is a big source of much of the world's phosphate production, which is useful for fertilizers. That's some 75% of the world's phosphate comes from. And also the Western Sahara has some phosphate that was found under Spanish rule at, I believe is the name of the mine. And also the waters off of Western Sahara have a lot of rich fisheries. Sardines, for example, a large source of sardines. People have said that under Morocco, it's finally been that these resources have developed, and they have indeed, the development has indeed benefited the region. The Moroccan government has invested in the territory. It, has life been better then for this Sahrawi population under Moroccan rule?
Well, under the current king, absolutely. Under Hassan II, I'm not going to lie, it was a little bit complicated. There were mistakes made. Some of the issues that we discussed have been met with a great deal of force, and there's been some regions of the country where there's been some level of tensions and grudges against the monarchy itself, in part because of what happened. But over time, a lot of this has been overcome, not everything, but a lot. And, you know, there's been a particular region of Morocco called Rif that's always been kind of restive. There's been some issues not even related to all of this. There's just been certain tribes that have been not particularly satisfied with being integrated into any state in general, just not because they want to be part of some other country, but just not happy with the way things are. But overall, they have not been an entire separatist movement either. The issues with Polisario are a little bit different because Polisario are outsiders. The leadership there is sponsored by foreign states. It's not an issue of Moroccan internal issues. The Sahrawis themselves have indeed greatly benefited in the last 25 years from huge investments, and it's become even more developed in the last few years. I've traveled to the region. It's really quite growing. New buildings, a lot of attention being devoted to developing communities, to providing education, providing opportunities for the locals. In fact, people are being encouraged to settle there and to essentially improve the area, to grow the area, and it's only likely to grow in the future as Morocco is asserting more of a control over their area and trying to protect its borders. So Polisario's claims about it are have nothing to do with the Moroccan state. These are entirely self-serving claims. Polisario has not at any point done anything that was beneficial to the actual population. They have not provided them with any tools, whatever criticism you could launch at the Hassan II rule. Polisario was actually significantly worse in that respect. They essentially used these populations without really trying to build up any real infrastructure or providing anything that would benefit the population or investing into them at all. So their claims have been largely symbolic and self-serving.
Well, thinking of Polisario, you know, we discussed in the past how precisely this Cold War background to the Polisario being supported, backed by the Soviet Union as yet another national liberation movement, along with the Soviet Union's allies, proxies like Cuba, which shared a Spanish heritage with the Western Sahara history of Spanish colonization. Why does Algeria today continue to back the Polisario? In the 21st century, what interest does Algeria still have in this?
Well, there are several things. First of all, Algeria is ruled by a military junta, which is symbolically secularist, and they're actually still connected to the same types of people who were backed by the Soviet Union. So it's the same ideology. Ironically, many of these junta members are actually Moroccans who left the country. There was a hardcore leftist movement in Morocco at one point was used by Hassan II against there was a hardcore leftist movement, and Hassan II eventually backed some of the more religious and Islamist parties against the leftists, because at the time the hardcore Marxist groups presented sort of a threat to the entire region, and the Soviets were very much interested in supporting these people. So some of them actually ended up fleeing to Algeria and ended up joining the leadership there. There are jokes in Moroccans about who's going to be the next Moroccan dictator of Algeria. These guys are mostly very old. They have not reformed in any meaningful way at all. The country is an oil-rich country, unlike Morocco, but nevertheless, it's most 60%. There's something around the 60% of youth unemployment. It's a very young, young population and woefully unemployed. There's a great deal of poverty and dissatisfaction and unrest and security issues that are being covered up. There's a rising Islamism despite the secular nature of the actual government. That's not being openly discussed. And Algeria has also been, nevertheless, despite all these internal issues, Algeria sees itself as a strong, important African state, and in that sense views Morocco as a direct competition in North Africa and in the region. It has also aligned with Iran, especially in later years, on many political and social issues that have been growing. A volume of trade between the two countries. And so Iran, that is also, Iran has particular strategic interests in Morocco and has also been using Algeria to back Polisario to that effect. So it gets to be a little bit complicated geopolitically, because Algeria has its own interests and it's always been anti-Moroccan. But at the same time, its alliances are also kind of creating the situation. Now there's Turkey also coming into the picture. Turkey has tried to build a relationship with Morocco, PJG, the current government's leading party, is very much affiliated with. It's in a way modeled after some of the. After the Turkish Islamist parties, but in reality, Morocco has always asserted a very independent policy, and the king has not been favorable to any sort of influence or incursions inside the country. And so Turkey has tried to develop relations with neighboring countries instead. So you are seeing a lot of foreign influence in the region, in Algeria, which is quite poor and has completely mismanaged its economy, is also looking for ways to divert attention from its internal problems by supporting these anti-Moroccan causes, and also gets backing from its foreign allies who have an interest in kind of having these maneuvers and some level of instability in the region.
Well, speaking of Algeria, you know, this Sahrawi Arab Democratic Republic. It was actually admitted as a member of the African Union, or then the Organization of African Unity, in 1982, and then Morocco left the Organization of African Unity back then, or now the African Union, as it's called, in protest to this move. Has Algeria been able to influence much of the rest of Africa to supporting this Polisario cause?
Initially, yes. In fact, one of the biggest obstacles to the from Morocco's perspective was the fact that Egypt, one of the biggest actors in Africa, had backed Algeria on these issues in the past. But in recent years, things started to change. First of all, the king has put a great deal of emphasis on regional diplomacy. There's been a shift from viewing Morocco as a Middle Eastern affiliate to being part of Africa, and there's been a great deal of effort spent on developing bilateral and multilateral relations inside Africa. Morocco has moved to rejoin African Union, despite the Polisario-backed entity is still there. But there's also been a movement for a number of African countries to move away from Polisario support. First, in part due to humanitarian aid and trade relations with Morocco, but also in Egypt and others started shifting away when they saw Iran's hand in this movement, and Algeria has become a bit of a problem for them as well. So there is also a general geopolitical shift towards bigger, larger issues in the region. Turkey's and Iranian involvement in North Africa is very disconcerting to some of the other countries. And so they're increasingly seeking to improve their relations from Morocco. And I believe we will start seeing a pattern of countries de-recognizing the Sahrawis and eventually pushing for designation of Polisario as a terrorist organization at some point.
Well, thinking of the Sahrawis now, there has been for the last almost 30 years now a ceasefire brought about in 1991 between Morocco and the Polisario under the United Nations, and that established in a United Nations mission whose name in Spanish, or acronym in Spanish, is MINURZO, and it was designed to set up a referendum in Western Sahara to determine the ultimate fate of the territory, whether it would become independent or part of Morocco. That referendum has never occurred. If such a referendum were to happen, there's a question of who would vote in it. Are not now the majority of the population in Western Sahara, we've indicated before, majority Moroccan? So is it not true that the majority of people in this territory now want to stay with Morocco?
Absolutely. In fact, this whole idea of a referendum, to be honest, is a bit of a farce, because any referendum in Polisario-controlled territories would be due to people being either brainwashed or forced to vote a certain way. They have not had any sort of access to alternatives, really. So no one would necessarily... I don't believe that most people would choose to join Polisario and become an independent state, because Polisario has not done anything to offer them a viable alternative to Morocco's sovereignty. As I said, they diverted humanitarian aid. The people living under their control are living in poverty. There's no real, freedom of any sort, and they're subjected to constant abuses in Tindouf camps. Tindouf camps are basically slave camps. There is active open slavery, and there's drugs, organized crime, abuses, human rights abuses. Prisoners are tortured brutally, and are left in completely inhumane conditions. So none of that is very promising for an average person coming in. So those Sahrawis who are living outside Polisario control you don't see the flow of people in that direction. You see the flow of people in the opposite direction. Whoever escapes those camps actually goes to Morocco, and not even other countries or UN asking for refuge. They go back to Morocco They get citizenship, you know, and they live as any Moroccan would.
Yeah, that's interesting. And so it was, of course, always a question of who would get to vote in any such referendum. You know, with all these people from Morocco coming in, you know, the Polisario was insisting that it would only be, you know, people who had lived in Morocco before, in the Western Sahara before Morocco controlled the territory in 1975. But of course, now beginning for, with this Green March, you've just had, you know, waves of Moroccans coming in. You know, people, of course, would make the analogy that, you know, speaking of what people condemn as this other occupation of Israel in the disputed territories, that of course their Jews are asserting their rights to live in this ancestral homeland. So, you know, now they're living there and you have that population. So it doesn't seem to me like either in Western Sahara or in, you know, Judea and Samaria, you can, the West Bank, you can, you know, kick out these populations or something or expect them to accept, this rule of this new entity of the Polisario on the one hand, or of this Palestinian Authority on the other hand.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, honestly, this whole situation, there are, by the way, direct parallels between what we are seeing going on with Polisario and what we are seeing with Palestinian Authority because of the common roots of how it all came about and corruption and internal abuses and also the involvement of the European states that had motivated the leaderships to not engage in any reforms, not change anything, and they've been basically bought off with unlimited humanitarian aid and unlimited it's an impunity to engage in these practices and in this political line. Europe has actually very much backed this sort of style of governance, if one can call it that, and that has actually contributed to the problems that we're seeing and the continuation of conflicts.
Well, that's another interesting issue then. You know, you talk about European countries supporting Polisario, similar to we think of all the European aid and international aid going into the Palestinian Authority. So I guess in both cases, there's a parallel that, you know, these Western taxpayers, these Western countries are supporting these corrupt dictatorial institutions. How is Europe moving on the issue of Western Sahara? Some have indicated that actually a lot of European countries and countries around the world were, as you indicated, moving away from this idea of referendum and supporting what the Moroccan government has been proposing and implementing in the recent decades of autonomy for this territory within the Moroccan state. What changes are we seeing in European states? And has the United States then taken a move in recognizing Western Sahara that many other countries will follow? I mean, similar to, say, like, United States recognizing Jerusalem as Israel's capital.
Oh, could you say the last part again?
Well, is the Trump administration's move on recognizing this territory as part of Morocco, is it sort of similar to like the United States recognizing Israel's Jerusalem as Israel's capital, and that other countries will in Europe and elsewhere will follow up on what the United States done?
I believe so, because we've already seen, even before the U.S. moved in that direction, we've already seen Arab states that had previously had, let's just say, somewhat ambiguous positions move in that direction. UAE, Bahrain, and several others have actually moved, agreed to build their consulates in the nearby cities, such as Laayoune. So that trend is already happening even before the U.S. has come in, with some of the countries that have been Morocco's allies, but have also had some differences with Morocco over various issues in the past. Europe may be slower to move in that direction for the same reason Europe has been slow to recognize Jerusalem as the capital of Israel. But most recently, when an Emirati sheikh who bought a Beit Ar in Israel called Jerusalem Israel's capital, it makes it more difficult for Europeans to to not do that, essentially, and to hold on to the old line of thinking. Similarly, once a number of countries becomes established in Sahara region, and there is physical evidence of recognition of the sovereignty. Right now, it's mostly symbolic and political, but once there is a more of an international movement in that direction, it will become disadvantageous for Europeans' own interests to continue playing these politics, because they will simply lose out on opportunities to invest and opportunities to engage in trade. It will become a matter of practical consideration. Already Europeans are taking somewhat of an economic loss due to Abraham Accords and Israel's ability to choose its own relationships. So far, there's still a huge volume of trade between Israel and Europe, just as there's a big volume of trade between Morocco and Europe. Morocco has always had a very pro-French orientation, but France has also used it in a way that put Morocco's created issues for Morocco's sovereignty. Similarly, Europeans have taken advantage of its very strong trade relationship with Israel to kind of create political pressure. So using these economic relationships to put political pressure, that's going to shift the more both countries engage diplomatically with others who put less emphasis on that particular aspect of their relationships. I think Europeans will be forced to concede sooner or later, whether they like it or not, but I don't think it's going to be in the immediate near future, because, this is a process.
Yeah, I guess there are divisions within Europe. France as its former protectorate power, colonial power in Morocco, has, strong ties to Morocco, and apparently has at the UN Security Council has often taken votes in favor of Morocco over the Western Sahara, whereas on the other hand, Spain, the former colonial power in the Western Sahara, they have actually a strong Sahrawi population in Spain, and they're known for being a supporter of this whole movement for Western Sahara independence. What are sort of the divisions within Europe regarding Western Sahara?
Well, France and Spain are both very big players, and Spain has had very recent issues with Morocco over Spain, with Spain making comments to the fact of two strategic cities that basically are on the way to connecting to the Gibraltar in Europe, and Spain has been holding to these Ceuta and Melilla, has been holding on to these last remnants of colonialism for geopolitical strategic reasons, and that these comments to that effect have led to a red book to the Prime Minister Otmani, who essentially stated that all of the territory is Moroccan sovereignty and Spanish colonialism has outlived its usefulness, and Morocco will eventually retake those territories. Whether or not that's going to happen is another story, because Spain seems quite militant about retaining control of that area, and nobody wants a big conflict between the two states that are also allies on some level. But the Spanish leftist party has been very, very anti-Moroccan. Now, the conservatives in Spain have been rising. Traditionally, the conservatives in Europe have somewhat of a better understanding of national sovereignty issues with respect to other countries. So there may be some improvement in relations on that level if they come to power. But for now, there is this political tension. France, culturally, most of the Moroccan elites are very close to the French. They're traditionally educated in France. There's a lot of business volume going on between France and Morocco. There's a huge Moroccan community in France. But at the same time, there are also tensions because of the colonial history, because France has never abandoned its aspirations for retaining some influence in North Africa. So many people resent French, what they consider French meddling, including on issues that in Africa that of interest to Morocco, but the French see important for their own retention of control. France does not want Morocco to become too independent. Aside from those countries, there are also parties in Netherlands and other European states that have been kind of causing some, instigating and funding some parties and internal movements outside in Moroccan expat communities and in Morocco that have been of concern to Morocco, such as the so-called Amazigh independence movement. And that started with a civil rights movement for the Amazigh population in Algeria that had faced discrimination on a cultural and political level, spread to Morocco, but Morocco has moved quickly to integrate Amazigh culture into its new constitution in 2011. There's been a great deal of effort into promoting Tamazight, the Amazigh language, and in reality, Morocco is a very mixed country, and you can't really say that there's quote unquote one ethnicity is dominant over the other. It's not accurate to call it solely Amazigh state or solely Arab state. I know that there are people who are inside the country who always try to claim one or the other, but neither is accurate. So this Amazigh independence movement has been a deliberate attempt by some countries and some parties within those countries to create instability by creating a false nationalist movement that really has no basis in any sort of reality. You know, Amazigh is such a central part of Moroccan culture that there is no real separation between that and Arab or other influences there. So some of these countries have been trying to cause additional issues. And of course, Polisario derives a lot of support from NGOs in the United Kingdom also, and some of these other European states. I believe some of the more practical countries in Europe, like Eastern and Central European states, are less interested in ideology and colonial battles that have nothing to do with their own interests, and more in doing direct trade with whoever is relevant to their needs. So I believe that in the future there may be a growing volume of trade between Morocco and Eastern and Central Europe. I don't think it's going to be easy for Morocco to completely offset the French involvement right off the bat, because there's sort of a cultural addiction that's in some ways not very healthy, because France abuses it to assert its own interests. But with the United States coming in and with the potential to grow the relationship with the United States on trade and political issues, that may happen eventually.
Well, thinking of the Polisario again, we've talked about its corruption and you've discussed its involvement in terrorism. Could this Polisario group ever run this territory of Western Sahara? I mean, currently Morocco controls about 85% of the territory of Western Sahara. The Polisario only has a small portion of the territory on the desert under its control, and there's this, you know, security barrier that the Moroccans have built. But if this Polisario movement were to ever take over, wouldn't it just be, you know, as you've indicated, sort of, you know, a den of drug running and corruption and terrorism? We've got groups like Al-Qaeda running around in North Africa. So what strategic advantage would there ever be to having such a Polisario movement take control in Western Sahara?
None whatsoever. I really don't see any practical reasons. And the only people who believe there is some sort of a realistic possibility of that happening are people who've been talking to Algerian lobbyists, who've played a very dominant information warfare role in Western countries, even in the United States, where this issue is of very little interest to most people. But in reality, Polisario don't have a realistic possibility of taking anything over. What they can, however, do is create enough of an instability for other groups to come in to create sustained border issues. Iran has trained Polisario through Hezbollah. has directly intervened in this conflict through its embassy in Algeria, which caused Morocco to sever its relationships with Iran in 2018. It hasn't stopped, despite these confrontations, to attempt to gain a foothold in the region, in Libya, in Algeria, through Tunisia, and now Morocco. Morocco's access to water is of strategic interest to Iran because of its interest in building bases in certain parts of the world. Yemen has been one of those places. Syria and now North Africa is a place where Iran really wants to gain a foothold, and it realizes that Moroccan military is quite strong. That a small terrorist group that is poorly organized and poorly and armed only with old Soviet weapons at power, Syria, does not really have a chance to prevail in a direct combat action. But they can cause problems which can be exploited on an international level through optics, through information warfare propaganda campaigns. And that's where those guys have been very adept, by spreading disinformation, creating optics, taking non-existent pictures of, photos from other areas, and making it seem like they're part of this conflict, and just trying to put international pressure on Morocco. After the most recent comments, there's been a great deal of European commentary against Morocco due to this information campaign. There's also been other attempts for Iran to align with the local Islamists. And we've seen that Polisario is quite flexible ideologically. They provide foothold for various types of groups, both for secularists, regular non-ideological criminals, and Islamist jihadists in the area. So this is all kind of a very indirect long-term effort to just create instability, to infiltrate the country ideologically by any means, to create bad optics, to create to damage its relations with Western states, and to essentially gain a foothold that can be used to train other militias to recruit Moroccans, not necessarily on the grounds of Polisario, because I think even Iran understands that that cause is pretty much dying out, but on other grounds, through other appeals, and just broaden its reach in that way.
Well, that raises, I guess, an interesting parallel, that Iran is acting with Polisario and Western Sahara, sort of similar to the way that Iran is, the whole Chavista, Hugo Chavez movement in Venezuela, other leftist movements throughout Latin America. Looking at the United States, I mean, you talk about lobbying and the politics of these issues. We've seen here in the United States precisely some Republicans opposed the Trump move. James Baker has written opposing this move. He's been involved in the United Nations negotiations in the past to have a referendum in Western Sahara under the so-called Baker Plan. And then also you had Senator Jim Inhofe, a conservative Republican from Oklahoma, also recently on the Senate floor, opposed this measure, denounced this measure of recognizing Western Sahara as part of Morocco. And also John Bolton has written recently in Foreign Policy against this move. Why are these? What particular relationship do these individuals have to this conflict, and why would they be so strongly against the move of the Trump administration?
So these particular individuals have always had very, very close relations with Algeria. I'm not going to say that they were necessarily paid off, but I'm not going to say that there hasn't been any lobbying outreach to them. They just had very close relations with them, all of them, both during their times in office and in private practice afterwards. They just are, ideologically, I won't say ideologically connected, but for whatever reason, Algeria has had them as their advocates from the beginning, and they are very unlikely to change their minds. Especially, that's particularly surprising with Bolton, given his hawkish anti-Iran position. You know, had we been talking about 30 years ago, maybe I could have given him a little bit of a break on this issue. But right now, there simply is no justification to support a group that is openly allied with Iran and Hezbollah. Just, there's none. There's nobody who even cares about Sakharovich. He could still be critical of Moroccan policies on certain issues without supporting terrorists at the same time.
Yeah, I guess, you know, well, James Baker, of course, is from Texas, and Jim Inhofe is from Oklahoma. So I guess, you know, there's sort of, you could speculate they're probably significant oil ties there. And as we've mentioned before, you know, Algeria is this major oil producer. So I imagine there have been interactions, you could speculate, in terms of oil in this ties. I guess, you know, Bolton is kind of interesting. You talk about how he was always, of course, a key opponent of Iran, but now we have Iran sort of meddling with Polisario here, and sort of kind of strange that he's taking a position that could actually have benefit to Polisario. I mean, you know, if the Moroccans were to leave, I guess there's not like a non-Polisario alternative, is there, among the Sahrawi population that could take over?
No, not at all. And there's no leaving. I mean, this was Moroccan territory, and Polisario is just making claims to it without any real basis or history of being an independent movement, an independent state, or having leadership that was not funded and created by other entities. I mean, there's none. There's, you know, they don't really have any historic basis for making these assertions. Morocco is not going anywhere, and at this point it seems very counterproductive to engage in these blatantly propagandistic manifestos on the part of these individuals that are not really going to benefit anybody. I mean, they're not proposing helping the Sahrawis, they're not calling for better investments or resolving current issues or addressing humanitarian concerns within Polisario-controlled territories. They're basically saying, just give it over to this group. And how does that benefit the United States? That's my question. I mean, it's one thing if you consider that one country's claims are better than another's, but Algeria does not have direct claims to that territory either. And with respect to Algeria, yes, it's a major oil-producing country, but it's also been not such a great ally to the United States historically and today, due to its closeness with Iran. So I'm not entirely sure why these individuals would put all their eggs in that basket when there are plenty of oil-producing states elsewhere that do not have that issue.
Yeah, I guess I'll also think of Algeria. If any sort of Polisario regime were to take over in Western Sahara, that would then be for Algeria and would increase its influence. So I'm not really sure why that would benefit anyone to have such a historical radical leftist regime have more dominant influence in the area.
Yeah, exactly.
But,
it's really not a non-starter, so to speak. Algeria doesn't want to govern them really either. They don't have the means to do that, despite being oil-rich. They're actually, most of the money that is devoted to this issue is devoted to lobbying, not actually arming these guys, because if they wanted to make it into a real conflict, they'd give them better weapons than old Soviet grenades and whatnot.
Well, yeah. Well, Irina, I really thank you for joining me today on Conservative Casual Friday. For our listeners listening in for this episode with with me, the show host, Andrew Harrod, and I hope people will tune in coming Friday next week as well for another show here where we like to look at issues for conservatives and others. And Irina Sukerman, a human rights lawyer and international security. Thank you again for calling in and sharing with us your expertise and your experience on this developing important issue. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much, and have a wonderful New Year.
Happy New Year to you all. Well, tune in next Friday for another episode of Conservative Casual Friday.